Retro is very big among the Detroit car makers these days, as you can see by the design of cars like the PT Cruiser and the Plymouth Prowler. But as our linguist Jeff Nunberg points out, the nostalgia extends to old-fashioned car names as well.
2 years ago, General Motors successfully revived the Impala name for its full-size Chevrolets, and last month at the Detroit Auto Show, the company debuted a new concept convertible that bears the name of the old Chevy Bel Air. But it's one thing to revive a name and another to revive its precise connotations. As the linguist Mark Aronoff has pointed out, the big three model names of the 1950s and 60s really acquired their meanings from their place in a vast and slowly turning wheel of brands. Recall how things were back then, when every American make of car had several distinct models for each of its lines, full-sized, mid-sized, and compact. In 1958, there were three full-size Chevrolet models, the Deluxe Bel Air, the Standard Biscayne, and the Economy Del Rey. The Impala was introduced in that year as a special edition of the Bel Air. Then the next year, the Impala became a separate model of its own, and the other models were demoted. The Bel Air became the standard model, the Biscayne became the new economy model, and the old economy Del Rey was dropped. The same process was repeated a few years later when Chevy introduced a new deluxe model called the Caprice and demoted the Impala and Bel Air a notch, eliminating the Biscayne name at the bottom. The cycle was the same at Chrysler and Ford. The Fairlane, the Galaxy, the LTD, each of them started out as a limited edition deluxe model, then worked its way gradually down the chain to the economy slot. While it lasted, it was the most elaborate and successful experiment ever undertaken in the semantic manipulation of demand. Every few years, a new name was introduced, fastened to a rare and desirable object, and then, over time, the cars it was attached to were made cheaper and more accessible to the point where anyone could have one. But it was also probably the most wasteful marketing strategy ever developed. Companies deliberately degraded their established brand names just to increase the demand for new ones, like a builder who lets an apartment complex go to seed so that tenants will want to move into the new one he's putting up next door. What was remarkable was that consumers were willing to buy into the illusions that the system rested on. In fact, there was virtually no difference between the models, apart from the options and trim. The main feature that distinguished the deluxe Chevy models from the standard and economy models was that they had three little round taillights on each side rather than two. But the great wheel of model names could only keep turning so long as the car companies could assume that consumers had nowhere else to go, that people would be willing to spend their entire lives climbing the ladder of GM brands, even as the company kept throwing more grease on the rungs. And by the 1970s, consumers were becoming less willing to replace their cars every few years just so they could own the new model, partly because new car prices were rising much more rapidly than the average family income, and partly because the Japanese and Europeans were grabbing large parts of the U.S. market with brand names that kept their luster over the long haul. By the 80s, American car makers were offering only one model per line. All of that led to changes in the kinds of names that manufacturers were putting on their models. The car names of the 50s and 60s were based on a few unimaginative patterns. Most were taken from the names of exotic destinations like the Monte Carlo and the Seville, from animals like the Mustang and Impala, or from vaguely superlative words like the Regal and the Invicta. But then those names didn't have to be evocative. Their connotations were inherited from their place in the constellation of brands and shifted as they moved from deluxe to standard to economy. It was only when the system broke down in the late 70s that car marketers took to using fanciful names in the fond hope they would connote the car's character all by themselves. That's when they began appropriating random English words or jumbles of nonsense syllables, as car names started to sound like the names of every other product. A Monte Carlo or Mustang could only be a car. But Prodigy, Protege, Prism, Precy, Prius, those could as easily be digital cameras or office productivity software. And other names sounded like they should be attached to China patterns or cosmetic lines. Corando, Elantra, Vitara, Sedona, Nubira. They're words out of some lingua branda of the far future, what we'll all speak when the last common noun has been trademarked. Among the big three, names like those started to become nervous incantations, as if the car makers believed the right string of syllables could somehow conjure a market niche out of nowhere. Long before General Motors announced this year that they were phasing out the Oldsmobile brand, you could tell the division was in trouble just from the desperation of its model names in the late 90s. Alero, Achieva, Bravada, Sierra with a C. It was a sad dotage for the brand that gave Americans classic model names like the Rocket 88, the Futuramic 98, the Starfire, and the Toronado. Of course, there's always the possibility that GM will someday bring back the names of some of those vintage Oldsmobiles, particularly if the nostalgia vogue continues. But I think it's safe to say we've heard the last of Alero.
Jeff Nunberg is a consulting linguist at Stanford University and the author of the new book, The Way We Talk Now.